Save big money now on new siding from LP Smart Side at Menards. Update and beautify your home with your choice of 13 timeless colors of pre-finished engineered siding. It's durable and includes a Sherwin-Williams factory finish paint warranty that means no painting for years to come. View our entire selection of siding from LP Smart Side today. And don't forget to check out our flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money
at Menards. Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Our lesson today is about a spoiled bully brat of a boy who grew to become the dictator of Cuba and was responsible for the deaths of tens of thousands of people. He may have wanted only the best for his people, but he went about getting it in every wrong way imaginable. So let's refer to my mirror and learn all about the life of Fidel Castro, our rotten man of the week. Magic mirror on the wall. Who is the most rotten one of all? Hi, hello, and howdy, my darlings, and welcome to Rotten to the Core. I am the not-so-evil queen, Joshua Waters, and I am thrilled to have you join my lessons. This is the history podcast where we use a magical mirror and a touch of humor to explore the lives and actions of some infamous figures from our past, all with the goal to learn valuable lessons from their mistakes that can help us in our current lives. It's finally the long-awaited time of spring here in Indiana, but I don't think the weather has gotten the memo yet. Damn groundhog lied to us again. I chose Fidel Castro for our lesson today because I honestly couldn't remember a thing about him. While, yeah, I learned about him in school, I was way too busy looking at my school crushes to retain anything about the dictator. Nevertheless, the best part about history is that it's always there for us to learn from. So let's get into it. Fidel Castro was born in the southeastern part of Cuba on August 13, 1926. His dad, Angel, came over from Spain and worked hard to become a pretty rich guy growing sugarcane. But here's the thing. Angel was no angel. And he started seeing his maid, Lena Gonzalez, behind his wife's back. Together, Lena and him had 7 children. And it wasn't until Fidel was 15 that his father left his first wife and married Lena. 2 years later, Fidel and his siblings were all formally recognized by their father, and their names were changed from Ruiz to Castro. Fidel's life really gives me some Ramsay Bolton from Game of Thrones vibes. There wasn't a lot of information available about Angel's first wife, Maria. The mirror didn't show if she died or abandoned the family, which also included her 2 children she had before Fidel and his siblings were born to the maid. Fidel went to a fancy Catholic boarding school where he was a star athlete, but not so great in class. He was known to be a troublemaker and a real bully. When his father found out about his bad grades and bullying, he threatened to cut off Fidel's allowance, which only enraged the spoiled child even more. His family was wealthy, especially compared to the extreme poverty in Cuba all around them. And it truly made the young dictator grow into a spoiled, rotten little shit. He was such a brat that he was known to stop playing with other kids if he started losing at a game. and he was prone to violent temper tantrums when he wasn't getting his way, a trait he would carry with him during his deadly regime. Fidel grew up in a beautiful rural area surrounded by palm trees and farm animals, enjoying a picturesque childhood in their lovely country home, and somehow still turned out the way he did. Man, teeny little weenies have really been the cause of so much trouble in history. At least, that's what I assume with all men like Fidel Castro. It's always the most unremarkable men who cause the most rotten problems in history. It feels like sometimes you can't win no matter what you do. And from what I've noticed, the guys who are born rich tend to harm more people on a larger scale, while those born poor tend to harm on a more personal level. But both groups still do pretty rotten things. I'll never understand why they wish to be known for such brutality for the rest of history. To be known for death and bloodshed instead of not being known at all. I guess we all can't be remembered as a not-so-evil queen. Pity. After graduating from boarding school, Fidel joined the Law School of Havana University in 1945. During his studies, he helped organize violent gangs that sought to promote a mix of Cuban nationalism, anti-imperialism, and socialism. It also got him more interested in politics. In 1947, he teamed up with Dominican exiles and Cubans to invade the Dominican Republic and overthrow General Rafael Trujillo. But they failed. But that didn't stop Castro from being excited about making changes. So the following year, he went to Bogota, Colombia to join in with the people protesting against the government. That same year, in 1947, Castro joined a political party in Cuba called Partido Ortodoxo. It was against communism and wanted to improve the government. The party's founder, Eduardo Hibas, was running for president but lost in 1948. However, he inspired Castro to take action against the corrupt government and warn people about General Fulgencio Batista's plans to take over. Fidel eventually got married to a woman named Mirta Balart, who hailed from a wealthy political family in Cuba, and they had a son named Fidel in 1949. Fidel's first son would eventually take his own life later on due to depression. But their marriage helped Castro get a better taste of the high life and also made him politically well-connected. In March 1952, General Batista pulled off a successful coup and overthrew the government. He also canceled the upcoming election, which left Castro in the lurch. Poor little Fidel was left with no legitimate platform to work on and no cash to support himself or his family. And once Batista took over as the dictator, he made sure he stayed in power by joining forces with the army and the rich in Cuba. The U.S. even gave official recognition to his government, which made Fidel and other members of the Partido Ortodoxo more than unhappy. So they got together and formed a group called the Movement to plan and overthrow Batista's regime. In 1953, Fidel Castro and his supporters tried to overthrow the Batista regime by attacking the Moncada military barracks near Santiago de Cuba. But the attack didn't work out, and Castro was caught, put on trial, and given 15 years in prison. While he was in jail, Castro renamed the group to the 26th of July Movement and kept on running things through correspondence. Finally, in 1955, he and his friends were set free as part of a deal with the Batista government. And after that, Fidel and Raul, his brother, went to Mexico to plan the revolution. While hanging out in Mexico, Castro met some other Cuban exiles and became buds with a man named Ernesto Che Guevara, an Argentinian man who thought the only way to help out Latin America's poor was through violent revolution. Ernesto had a big influence on Castro's political views, and they became pretty close. Find better heroes, good grief. Make it make sense why so many people look up to horrible men. Even today, with a rallying self-proclaimed patriots of the orange blob and failed president here in the U.S. I guess, refer to the statement about micro-PPs earlier. On December 2, 1956, Fidel and his crew arrived in Cuba on a boat called Granma. They had only 80 people with them and a small number of weapons near Manzanillo. Batista's forces were able to kill or capture most of them quickly, but Fidel, his brother, and a few others escaped into the Sierra Maestra mountain range along the island's southeastern coast. Over the next couple of years, Castro's gang kept on growing and fought a guerrilla war against the Batista government. They set up resistance groups in both big and small towns all over Cuba. Castro successfully created a shadow government, implemented agrarian reform, and took control of provinces that produced agricultural and manufactured goods. In 1958, Fidel and his crew went on a winning streak and took over some crucial places in Cuba. And with fewer and fewer people supporting Batista and many of his soldiers quitting, Batista's government crumbled because of Castro. And in January 1959, Batista ran away to the Dominican Republic, and at the age of 32, Fidel Castro had successfully helped to take over Cuba. At my age, he was helping to run an entire country. My only ambition is to buy a small wooded cottage and disappear into nature until I become a part of local folklore. Watch out for that witch in the woods. She's known to drain the life of any man who dares enter her realm. And they just keep coming back for more. After Castro's successful revolution, a provisional government was established in Cuba. A man named Manuel became the president, and José Cardona became the prime minister. The U.S. was quick to acknowledge this new government, and Castro arrived in Havana amid a sea of cheering supporters and took over as the military's commander-in-chief. Well, in February 1959, José Cardona quit. Then Fidel Castro became the prime minister of Cuba. He then began to put a lot of people from the previous Batista government on trial and executed most of them. Castro then made a lot of changes in Cuba to get rid of the U.S. economic control by taking over factories and farms. They also said that they would pay foreign firms based on the low values they had agreed on before to pay less taxes. And this caused a lot of trouble for American companies and strained the relationship between Cuba and the United States. And during that time, Fidel Castro repeatedly denied being a communist. We all know how my mind works, and it instantly pictured Consuela from Family Guy. Fidel, are you a communist?
No, no.
But to many Americans, and the rest of the world, his policies closely resembled a Soviet-style control of both the economy and government. Castro even visited the U.S. in April 1959 as guests of the National Press Club. In an effort to promote his tour, he even hired a well-known PR firm, but President Eisenhower turned down his request for a meeting. In May, Castro made a law called the Agrarian Reform Act. It said that people couldn't own too much land and only Cubans could own land in Cuba. The idea was to make a new group of farmers who were independent. But it didn't really work out that way. Actually, the government took control of all the land and the farmers just became workers for the government. Fidel's team also got cozy with the Soviet Union, who brought over 100 SSR advisors to help them get their defense committee up and running. But he swears he's not a communist. In 1960, Cuba signed a deal with the Soviet Union to buy oil and also become friends. But U.S. refineries in Cuba said no to processing oil, so Castro took them over. As you can imagine, the U.S. didn't like that, so they reduced Cuba's imports of sugar. And that's how a long and difficult relationship started between the two countries that lasted for multiple decades. You can take my life and my time, but I'll be damned if you take my sugar. History really shows just how addictive sugar is. Just think of how many people have died over it, excluding health-related problems. In 1961, Castro's relationship with the U.S. took a crucial turn. On January 3rd, the then-president, Eisenhower, ended diplomatic relationships with Cuba. And later on April 14th, Castro officially declared Cuba a socialist state. On April 17th, 1961, around 1,400 Cuban exiles landed at the Bay of Pigs in an effort to overthrow the Castro regime. The invasion was unsuccessful and resulted in the deaths of hundreds of people and the capture of over 1,000. It was revealed that the Cuban exiles had been trained and armed by the CIA, despite the U.S. denying any involvement.
Our bodies come in different shapes and sizes, so doesn't it make sense that our weight loss plans should too? That's the beauty of Noom. They build a personal plan that factors in dietary restrictions, medical issues, and other personal needs so your plan works for you. Noom doesn't restrict or shame when you want to treat yourself. Their flexible program focuses on progress instead of perfection. You don't have to give up carbs or anything. And with their daily lessons, you can learn something new about your food choices every day. After just a few days of using the app, I learned how to recognize cues for overeating and how to choose the right foods to feel full. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com. And check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.
American Criminal is a new true crime podcast from the studio behind American Scandal and American History Tellers. Every week, you'll fall deeper into the riveting stories of the country's most clever, craven, and cruel criminals. Fraud, theft, murder, and worse. Whatever the case, whoever the criminal, you don't know the whole story until now. The debut season tackles one of the most sensational cases of the 20th century, the Menendez murders. In 1989, young Lyle and Eric Menendez brutally shot their own parents. Prosecutors and the press said it was a multi-million dollar inheritance that led two greedy rich kids to murder. But the picture-perfect facade this Hollywood family built hid troubling abuse. Could these teenagers have been driven to kill? Or was it even in self-defense? Listen now. Go to AmericanCriminal.com or search for and follow American Criminal wherever you get your podcasts.
The plan to invade Cuba was formulated during the Eisenhower administration and was handed down to President John F. Kennedy. Although Kennedy reluctantly approved the invasion, he refused to provide air support to the invading forces in an effort to conceal the U.S. involvement. Castro then saw a chance to boost his power and push his own ideas after the incident. He put a stop to democratic voting in Cuba on May 1st and wasn't shy about calling out American imperialism. By the end of the year, Castro decided to become a Marxist-Leninist and announced that Cuba would follow communist economic and political policies. Then, on February 7, 1962, the U.S. enforced a complete economic embargo on Cuba. And if you understand how much we Americans love sugar, you'll see how big of a deal that was. Fidel, you're not you when you're hungry. Try a Snickers. After the Bay of Pigs incident, Castro got closer with the Soviet Union by taking more economic and military help. And that made him depend more on the Soviet Union, which led to a perilous situation in October 1962. It was so bad that the world was almost at a point where there could have been a nuclear war. These men would rather watch the world burn than fail at something. I blame the parents. While hoping to deter another U.S. invasion of Cuba, Castro and Soviet Premier Khrushchev conceived the idea of placing nuclear missiles in Cuba, just 90 miles off the coast of Florida. While the U.S. discovered that a missile base was being built before it could install the missiles, so President Kennedy ordered them to be removed and the U.S. Navy to check any ships going to that island. Not today, little dictators. After some negotiation, Kennedy and Khrushchev reached an agreement. The Soviets agreed to remove their missiles from Cuba, and in exchange, the U.S. publicly promised not to invade Cuba. That left Fidel humiliated when both superpowers left him out of the negotiations, all the while gaining admiration for restraint. And we all know how dangerous a dictator can be when they're embarrassed. Fidel didn't feel too bad for long after he messed up his plan to take down the Cuban government. He banded together with his revolutionary groups and the Communist Party of Cuba in 1965, and he took control of the party. For a few years after that, he worked on a campaign to help other countries in Latin America and Africa fight against imperialism with armed struggle. In the 1970s, Castro positioned himself as the leading advocate for third world countries by providing military assistance for pro-Soviet forces in Angola, Ethiopia, and Yemen. So even though the U.S. promised not to invade Cuba, they tried to take down Castro's government using other methods, including an estimated 638 assassination attempts by the CIA, ranging from exploding cigars to a fungus-infected scuba diving suit, and even the good old drive-by shooting. Castro often boasted that he would have won Olympic gold medals if avoiding assassination attempts was a sport. They should have just tried a poison apple. It worked for my sister, for the most part. Rest in pieces. Under Castro's regime, they opened up about 10,000 new schools and managed to get 98% of the population literate. Also, Cubans had access to better health care that reduced infant mortality to only 11 deaths in 1,000. But that was only the tip of the iceberg of what was truly happening, as labor unions were stripped of their right to strike, independent newspapers were also shut down, and religious institutions were harassed, as civil liberties were whittled away. Castro even removed any opposition to his rule through executions and imprisonments, as well as through forced immigration. Though there are no exact numbers, the Cuban archive estimates that tens of thousands of people were murdered, with a documented 5,600 killed by firing squads alone. Even more, Cubans were killed by state forces when they tried to flee the country, which occurred during the 1980 Canamar River Massacre and the Tugboat Massacre of 1994. During his rule, a lot of Cubans fled the country, and most of them made Miami their new home. The biggest exit of them all happened in 1980, when Castro gave permission to exiled Cubans to come back and reunite with their families. But upon arrival, Castro loaded ships with Cuban inmates and the mentally ill. Nearly 120,000 Cubans left for the U.S. in 1980. Well, after the Soviet Union collapsed in 1991, Cuba's economy went downhill. It was bad news for Castro's revolution that gradually started to lose its momentum due to the lack of affordable oil imports and a ready market for Cuban sugar and other goods in the USSR. Castro even asked the U.S. to end the economic embargo, but they said no. So he decided to try something different and opened up the market a bit. He even let people use U.S. dollars and allowed a small amount of tourism. In 1996, he even went to the U.S. and invited Cuban exiles to come back and start businesses. On July 31, 2006, Fidel made a huge announcement and said that his brother Raul would be the country's temporary leader. And in 2008, Fidel Castro stepped down from his position as the Cuban president due to his declining health. At that time, he was 81 years old, and Raul was appointed as the new president of Cuba by the Cuban National Assembly that same month. However, there were reports starting that Castro retained his position as the first secretary of the Communist Party. While in his retirement, Fidel began writing a column about his experiences and opinions called Reflections of Fidel. Kind of sounds like a perfume. And in 2007, his autobiography, My Life, was published. Let me guess what was in this book. Grew up rich with a small PP and wanted others to suffer because of it, and my unresolved anger issues. Sounds about right to me. Even though Castro wasn't directly involved in running Cuba every day, he still had a lot of power in the country and around the world. In 2012, he met with leaders in Iran and two different popes who were seeking to gain more freedom for Catholics living in Cuba. Even President Obama, who was the first sitting president to visit Cuba in 90 years, visited the country. But he didn't meet with Fidel, who denounced the Goodwill mission, saying, "We don't need the empire to gift us anything." Fidel Castro eventually died on November 25, 2016, at the ripe old age of 90. Although there is no official count, it is believed that he fathered at least 9 children with at least 5 different women. Following his death, Cuba declared 9 days of mourning. Well, thousands of Cubans lined up to pay tribute to their leader at a memorial. All the while, the crowd was chanting, "Viva Fidel! Long live Fidel!" Bless their hearts. While there was mourning in Havana, Cuban exiles around the world celebrated the death of the man they believed was a tyrant, who was responsible for killing and imprisoning those thousands of Cubans and separating generations of families. And I'll end our lesson with a failed quote of Fidel's that I find more than a little humorous on this podcast about rotten people in history. He said, "Condemn me, it does not matter. History will absolve me." Our test determined that was a lie. I learned from Fidel Castro that when your child is known as the worst bully in school and doesn't play well with others, you should probably do more than threaten to take away their allowance. Perhaps if the young dictator had been taught a lesson about the real consequences of their bad actions, we could have avoided their whole lethal regime. I also learned a newfound fear of assassination tactics by the CIA. An exploding cigar? That definitely wasn't on my history bingo card. I hope you found the life of Fidel Castro as eye-opening as I did. Although I was alive during the last part of his life, I was a little too preoccupied with things like Pokemon and Spice Girls to pay any attention to the news. Gotta catch 'em all. And with that, it brings us to the end of our lesson today, my darlings. So let's cleanse ourselves, and I'll let you be off on your next adventure. Just take a deep breath and ground yourself in the here and now. May my mind, body, and spirit communicate clearly, allowing me to live in harmony with myself and those around me. Let any negative thoughts within me fade away, leaving only positivity and love. May I move forward with clarity in alignment with my highest self, allowing ease and flow to guide me towards my greatest desires. May I always remember that I am in constant connection and co-creation with Source. So be it. Thank you for joining me and supporting Rotten to the Core. Let's catch up again next week. In the meantime, be happy, find peace, and don't hurt anyone. I'd love to hear what you thought about Fidel Castro and what lessons you learned on any of my socials. If you enjoy Rotten to the Core, please follow me on Instagram or join me on Patreon. Both of those are at It's Rotten to the Core. My TikTok, while it's still legal, is at Rotten in History. And you can also listen to me on my other podcast, Mystery Inc., that I do with my brother Shane and our good friend, producer Kim. We also have a Facebook group called Shane and Josh's Rabbit Hole, where we will interact and have a plethora of extra fun, foul, mysterious, rotten, and historical things a-brewin'. It was lovely spending time with you today. Have a fantastic week, my darlings. Bye.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.